In the 2024 exhibition, The Buildings Notice Me, there is a wooden wall-mounted sculpture titled Tūranga Hākua by Whangārei-based artist Brooke Cornier. The kōrero informing this work navigates the places, people, objects, customs, and ways of relating to each other that transition someone from wandering and wondering to being welcome. In this podcast episode, Cornier is joined by artist and 2024 Adam Art Gallery intern Rosalie Koko as they discuss the ways in which Tūranga Hākua can be seen as a tohu of belonging, joy and aspiration.
Kia ora tātou, ko Rosalie Koko tōku ingoa, ko Rosie Rane. Huri tēnei no Ngāti Kahunganu ki Hiritanga no Taranaki no Hāmoa hoki. E whānau mai au e te ao moemoea. From Ngāti Kahunganu, I was born in Australia and raised in Australia. And I came through the Toihō Ki Apiti program at Massey University, Te Kininga Ki Purehurua, with Aroha. And Brooke, which is how we met. Yeah, do you want to introduce yourself?
Oh, yeah. Te mihi tuatahi, kei te mihi ki tēnei whare, ko te pātaka toi, kei te mihi ki te kai pūpuri, the curator ko Sophie. Yeah, kei te mihi, kei te aumihi, kei te whakamihi. Ko Brooke Cornier tōku ingoa, he uri no Ngāti Porou, Pākehā, ko te mana, anō hoki. I tipu aki au I a whangarei. My name's Brooke. My whakapapa is to Ngāti Porou on the East Coast, but also to my Pākehā is through my mum in England, Nottinghamshire, and through dad as well, through Scotland and coming from the early Scottish migration, coming from the Isle of Skye. Yeah, tēnā koutou.
Oh, that's really cool. I don't know, but I love Skye. interesting. Yes, okay. So I had a few questions that I thought would be good points of discussion. I guess my first one is, Heaha te Tūranga Hākua, why did you choose this kupu as the title for your mahi?
Yeah, so Tūranga Hākua, I came across this word, it's written in a whakamaoritia, a Māori translation book of a Dr. Seuss, Oh, the Places You'll Go. I guess I was reading this book because over the last few years I've been on a journey of learning te reo Māori, and yeah, it just seemed like a word that was really speaking to how I was feeling. Oh, the Places You'll Go is a book that speaks about one's journey that you go on in life. And yeah, it's kind of just come up again and again through life. While I was making this work, I was working at the library in Palmerston North, in Awapuni, and as we were leading up to the summer, there was like a kids' reading challenge, and so that was a new thing for me to be sitting down with a kid who's on their own like learning journey with reading. Yeah, so it just kind of put me in this space. Yeah.
That's a nice experience because, like, I guess a lot of the things of this work is about, I guess, kind of learning also as an adult some things that, like, we're trying to regain of our mātauranga Māori. So that's, yeah, nice experience which ties in, helps inform, like, what you were thinking about when you were making. Yeah, because I remember during my undergrad and you and Java were in your little studio working together, and like we would sometimes come over and see you. Yes, I remember you guys making this work, and it was part of like your wider installation for your post-it, which was Tūru noho ora. I guess, do you want to talk about that a bit?
So 2022, I'd enrolled at Toihoho Ki Apiti, Massey University, to study in the Māori Visual Arts course. I headed that way because I'd previously worked with Nigel Burrell, who'd done his undergrad there a few years ago. But I guess I just kind of felt a connection. I wanted to go and spend some time studying. The postgrad and master's journey through Toihoho Ki Apiti was an invitation to do a self-led project and develop a kind of research project of your own. And it seemed like a really safe place to be exploring whakapapa, Māori art, and my connection within all of that. Tūru noho ora, I named that project that because I was developing, I'd been thinking about a lot what it is to have a conversation with someone. To sit down and to maybe hear something new. A lot of this project was to do with going and meeting a lot of whānau that I hadn't personally met, cousins, aunties, uncles, through my taha Māori. And so it was kind of just developing the idea of what it is to kind of sit down and have a chat with someone. So that's for the kupu tūru, for noho, the word for sit, but I was also thinking about what it is to reside in a place. Having moved to Palmerston North to study, that was really my main kinship to that place, but I've been moving around, just kind of, I guess, as you do in life. Between different places, and also through the project, I was thinking about how I grew up in Whangarei, Te Tai Tokoro, but exploring my taha Māori over on the east coast. We're a small island, but it's a big journey to go over that way and take the Highway 35. And it's something that I've done later in life through my mid-20s. And order, to be well, to know that the things that you're doing are because it's looking after, I guess, yourself and others, and what my hopes were for me learning about my whakapapa to give to the next generation coming through. My cousin Richard's had two sons now, and so you can kind of see the next branch going along, and so I just want to be able to gift some things that I had to go hunting for.
I think it's a really relevant issue because so many Māori live outside of their rohe, so we really need to consider, and I guess this is your way of doing that, obviously, what it is to be a manuhiri on someone else's whenua. You talked a lot about how being welcome from a state of wandering. I guess you moving on to a different so to explain, so Tūru noho ora is kind of similar to how we're sitting now, really, because you made the your two benches out of the same decking material,
yeah.
Kind of facing each other, one there, so people would sit. And I guess in our Matatai exhibition, it was nice because it was kind of at the entrance, right?
Ooh.
And it was, people could kind of sit and have a rest before going around the rest of the exhibition. Things of noho are like real strong, I guess, like to me when I think about the work, I guess because of the whakapapa of the materials, like it was made from, like the Tūru Noho Ora is literally like chairs, and this is made of the chair deki, like the material. So yeah, I guess, did you wanna have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, that, and that's totally it. I the idea of having an artist talk is something that I was quite intrigued about with this artwork and this kind of kaupapa that I've been wanting to develop. I'm a really big fan of kind of real-time performance and happenings. I guess coming through, I did my bachelor's up at Elam School of Fine Arts up in Auckland, and so learning about Alan Kuprau's kind of thinking around what is an artwork, can it be something that happens in the everyday? Yeah, it links with my thinking about what it is to have a conversation with someone, and that's, you know, you can walk away from having talked to someone and it'd be such a treasure and such a cool memory. It's something that's not tangible, but it's something that you can take with you. If there was a learning from that, you can share it on. Mm. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that's wrapped up in this artwork. This work's made of reclaimed timber from the timber reclaim site by the recycling and rubbish tip of Palmerston North, and so it was going and meeting them that were going around, I guess, demolition sites and places that timber was, and letting them have a second life. Yeah,
I guess. One thing that you also mentioned, which informed your mindset, was the Te Whakapakoko or Manene Nui, the essay by Hirini Mokomeid, which he wrote in the 90s, which still has a lot of relevance today. So the essay that he wrote was about, this is related, I'm gonna like explain a little bit, but it's related to what you were saying. He wrote the essay about his Whakaero piece that he did, Manene Nui, which is his attempt at carving a pautoko manawa, which inside the marae, inside the whare, it's the figure that supports the tahuhu in the centre of the whare. And so he related it back to his effort of Manene Nui was relating back to what he saw as the situation of the urban Māori. And I guess I'm gonna like read a little section from it, which I guess stood out really strongly to me, which is relating to the timber. So the figure is carved out of demolition timber. It is a piece of totara that a Wellington man, Selwyn Smith, who values totara highly and who loves Māori carving, rescued from the bulldozers and the dump. Part of the wood had rotted away and other parts had great big spikes nailed into them. The mark from that sort of wound can be seen in the top knot. With all its faults, however, and there are many, as inspection will show, totara remains a beautiful wood. What we have to do is to create the conditions which will reveal its intrinsic beauty so that we can enjoy it for years to come. The same can be said of the urban Māori. Despite all the troubles which beset us and the people who let us down, notwithstanding unemployment, drunkenness, drugs and crimes, and even adding a long history of injustices and old grievances, we cannot really be relegated to the junk heap. Something beautiful remains. The wairua Māori can still be seen and it can still be revived. What we have to do is to create conditions so the heart of Māori culture can throb again and the inner beauty of Māori tanga can thrive and be enjoyed. And so, yeah, that when I was thinking about your work, that was the part that stood out to me most, because the whakapapa of the timber, because they came from, had a whole history before you turn it into your mahi. And I guess it's like a ship of Theseus type situation. Yeah. Like, what remains after, like, years of kind of degradation and certain losses? Like, there's a something, like, inside that remains that's still strong, I guess.
Totally, yeah. For me, relating to these rākau that I was wanting to work with it within my materiality, thinking about that, these were parts of the structure for a house, you know. There's a whakaruru ho, there's a sheltering there, and just because of my kaupapa being, it was quite personal, but I guess wanting to be quite strong in what I was wanting to say, because I know I'm not alone in this kind of maybe becoming, that there's others like me that have a very kind of urban Māori te ao Pākehā upbringing, but wanting to just give it a go, have a go at learning that, and that kind of sheltering that these works, that this timber had, I guess, innately within them. That's what I was relating to.
And you use different types of timbers, like totara, rimu, pine, and what was the last one?
Mātai. Yeah, and like what this was me going around the reclaimed timber site. It was all outside. The timber was arranged by what type it was, and because I don't have a trained eye for looking at rākau and being able to that's a totara. I was going around with the ones that worked there, and they just I found it really incredible that they could just look at it and know. I'm hoping to kind of learn to have that eye. I don't know if I'll ever get it, but I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, something to aspire to.
Yeah.
I get inspired by like people who have those skills, who've been working at it their whole lives. Like the knowledge that tonga tuku iko, like the knowledge passed down from our tipuna, that we're in a process of regaining. Because I'm in a similar situation to you. Many Māori grow up in, like, I guess, te ao Pākehā. We're kind of imbued with, like, Western knowledge systems, and where many of us are on a journey to reclaim and regain the knowledge that was lost from us. There's a quote from Te Kōti, and it was like, he was saying, be wary of the things that the knowledge that Pākehā hold, like Māori need to take what is essential and still retain our ways of knowing. But I guess to me now, like growing up in Te Ao Pākehā, I've been personally imbued with lots of those Western knowledge systems. And so it's a process for me currently, I mean, and I guess it's ongoing as well, of shedding what's not serving me, retaining what's essential, and also regaining things that have been lost. And I guess, it's a hopeful tohu that we can do that, because also it relates to Tania's journey of gathering the three kete of knowledge.
So that comes into, I guess, the amounts of slats that I've given this work. Across this work there's 12 ascending paired slats working their way up, and that's me relating to the pūrākau of Tāne's journey of collecting ngā kite wānanga. In pairing these slats, what I've done is a half lap, which is something that I'd seen on several deck chairs. It's worth mentioning that I'm not like a trained carpenter. I'm quite a dabbler in my art practice and just like giving things a go. And so for this half lap of these two pieces that come together and join, I was thinking about what it is to, I guess, have a conversation with someone, and maybe if there was a joining there, there was like of a hongi, being kanohi, ki te kanohi, being close up and being next to someone. Yeah, that's the kind of journey that, for me, that's the way that I relate to the pūrākau of Tane's journey, that his ascension to gain this knowledge came with trials, with whiro, and I find that much, for me, relating to the pūrākau, yeah, I don't know, I think I find moments quite hard. There's moments of anxiety, self-doubt, but I look at that pūrākau, and it's something that gives me strength. Tāne Nui Arangi, of Tāne's, it's Tāne's name for while he was on this journey. It is also the name of the whare nui, University of Auckland. And that's my kind of first point of learning this pūrākau. And that whare nui was really big for me, being an 18-year-old going and taking on life, moving down to Auckland. I had had this big kind of incredible moment of coming to this whare nui, and it was kind of like this first, not lecture, but kind of lecturer, small talk. Jonathan Manafioke led this, and it was just kind of encouraging us to learn about Māori art history. And so one of the readings from that was Te Māori, the book for the exhibition. Within that, like on the first page, there's a proverb, there's a whakatauki that goes, rārangi, rārangi maunga, e tū te ao, e tū te pō, ngā tangata kāngaro, kāngaro, which kind of translates as the mountains will stand to day and night. They'll always be there, even as the people fade. And it's just kind of always been something that I relate to, and just having that wider vision is like keep going, keep having a go.
I guess just bringing it back to Tane's journey to attain knowledge, something I think Sophie definitely had in mind when setting up this part of the exhibition is that we have Tūranga Hākua, which relates back to that pūrākau, and also works by Megan Brady and Dorian Bloomhart, the ceramic work back there, which all reference that pūrākau. And I think one thing that was nice is that Megan, when she was, because this work was commissioned for the exhibition, and so when Megan was making it, she knew that this piece had that reference, and also I guess Dorian Bloomhart's ceramic, and so something that is nice is that there's like I guess visual consistencies between Megan's work, your work, the use of timber, rimu, and one thing that I saw in Megan's work was the manawa line, which also is strong for you here. Megan's kind of goes down the fabric in a like similar zigzag, but when she talked about it, she was talking about upnea. Don't think I'm saying it right, but she talked a lot about that because it's a breathing pattern that you fall into when you're in a state of like peace and you're not stressed, and that's the time when it's best to be learning and getting new information, because we know that it's hard to focus on anything, but especially new things, when you're very stressed, which unfortunately I think is the norm sometimes when you're learning, like at uni or just in life generally. But like something that was cool is that this work, I guess, to me visually references the 12 heavens, and Dorian Bloomhart references the kete, the te kete aronui, te kete tuatea, te kete tuauri. Like visually there's three kete there. And then Megan's also has the whatikura, like the sacred stones, which were gathered together as well with the three kete. So it's nice that different aspects of the pūraku are being referenced in this kind of area of the exhibition. And then because, like, the way, I don't know how, what's nice to me is that, like, at the end of the pūraku, that was the start of the whariwananga, like, when Tane brought the kete back, that was the start of the whariwananga, and the whatikura, like, used in the whariwananga to, like, fix knowledge in people's heads. Yeah, that's just what I was thinking about. Okay. I guess it, when you were talking about the half-lap joint, it made me also think of different aspects of the structure of the whare whakaero, because do you know about the waha pai pai, that joint between the heki and the po?
Yes.
So, like, for everyone's edification, I guess, the waha pai pai is the type of joint that was, intrinsic to Māori architecture in the building of the whare whakaero. So you've got the heke coming down, the rafters coming down, connecting to the head of the popo. And one of the types of joints that's, like, traditional is the waha pai pai. So, like, waha can mean mouth or entrance, and pai pai can mean, well, literally it means horizon, but also, like, the pai pai is an area of the whare. As, you know, you have talked about, like, the, like, demarcation between, rongo and tū, like, a space of challenge, like the marae ātea, and a space of peace, like, inside the whare. Anyway, the waha pai pai, it's like a horizontal join, whereas the ruawhetu is the other join, and that's more curved. And so that made me think of that, like, relating the half-lap join is pretty similar to the waha pai, the waha pai pai, right?
Yeah. To relate into that, I think for this work, like, I've chosen to use, I guess, you know, a quite Western kind of approaches with carpentry, and so I, in doing that, I'm relating to processes of what it is to build a wharenui, of what it is to build a house that has whakapapa, and so that's, while I'm not emulating those techniques,
yeah,
that's kind of what I'm wanting to show in my work. For this work, and with the half-lap join, I've also separated them a bit to reveal this kind of middle manawa line a bit more. Like the pieces would, not, you know, on a seat, they're the back, it would be the back support and the seat support join. That would need to be strong to be able to hold someone up. And to reveal it like that, it makes this quite a vulnerable piece. To connect into what you were saying, you know, to hold up a wharenui, you'd want all of your joints to be really strong. My work, I'm wanting there to be that kind of tension between vulnerability. If this piece were to fall off the wall right now, there's a high chance that some of the slats would just come apart.
Right, yeah. Good to know.
Yeah, I guess what I'm doing with the work, yeah.
I guess there's, like, also another tohu of, like, adult learning, because it was your first time woodworking, like when you're at
Prince Yeah, since like high school and doing kind of like introductory techniques there.
Which I think is kind of nice, because like it's not totally, like as you can see, it's not totally like finished, like it's not varnished or anything. There's like a little bit of like roughness to it. So I guess that's kind of nice, because to me it's like symbolic of, yeah, learning is a lifelong journey. Like we're never fully done. Like there's still more, always more to be picking up on and keeping yourself open to. And it is a vulnerable thing, like learning as an adult through your life, because you know you have to acknowledge that there's stuff like missing or stuff lost, and so yeah, there can be a lot on my mind there, which I've definitely felt as well. Yeah, vulnerability. What's our time?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, what the plugs that you've placed, the 12 plugs, what was your inspiration for those?
The inspiration was the doweling that connects the back support and the seat support. Specifically that, those little wooden plugs in the deck chair that I was kind of emulating and looking at the techniques. But as I kept going, they became more design elements. So these, for this work, then they're not actually plugging the two pieces. They're just kind of face, small kind of coin-sized pieces of wood that I've fitted into a circular shave that I did with the drill. And that was to, I guess, to kind of show that join still, show that kind of iteration of what I was doing with connecting back to the chair, because I'd given it such significance through the whole project. But for this, and across the 12 different slats, I've made them trios. There's three circles that are Tōtara, that are Rimu, Matai, and Pine. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I appreciate that too. Like, we have your use of native timber, and then also pine, an introduced species, which I guess we really heavily rely on, like in the forestry industry. I guess just, it seems like an acknowledgement that, you know, we're, like, we contain, you know, our taha Māori and our taha Pākehā can kind of work together, and there's aspects of both which are beneficial.
Totally, yeah. And the thing with the pine is that that's not a wood that I went to the reclaim centre to as well. This was kind of, what do you call it, disregarded pallets that I was seeing across the streets around town, and I just thought I could use them too. It talked about, I related to them too, in that through mum and dad, they both work in the supermarkets, and that's how I got into working. So I'm very in the know about pallets and the way that they move around the country internationally. They stock everything up and then they get shipped off. They do a lot of moving. And so I connected into, them to mum and dad, but also the idea of what it is to move around.
I guess a funny story that I have from our time, I guess not with each other, but my time at Pūtahi, in regards to Tōtara, the use of Tōtara, in my first year as well, we did carving some for Kairo, but we, to my memory, we were kind of, the Tōtara was reserved for like when we had actually gotten some skills together and weren't just like hacking away willy-nilly kind of. I think I remember using pine initially pretty strongly, and I remember Bob Rabayonke, who created the course, I guess when I personally showed some skill in carving using the router, that's when, oh no, Israel Tangaroa Birch, he gave me the totara to work on. And then Bob, after that, when I put my carving up on the wall and Bob saw it, he's like, you can call me uncle now, because we have like a marital, he's my uncle through my cousin's marriage. Just, yeah, not my real uncle, but yeah, it was just a funny thing. And then another whakaaro that I heard from our master carver was that, well, I guess there's this kind of like caution around tōtara being a material that's tapu. I guess, and for me as a wahine using it, I've heard kōrero from some carvers like it's not the female element. Wahine should stick to pōnamu carving, which is slightly less accessible than, you know, like tōtara or like reclaimed rākau, which was just a funny thing. Yeah, but tikanga isn't static, like, you know, we can change, it doesn't have to.
Yeah, I am, you know, we're moving in a generation where, you know, the world's really spinning around. There's a lot of things going on. And when it comes to, I think, materiality for the Māori artist, I think a lot about kohi, what it is to collect something and collect the things that are around you, that are accessible to you. And through that, you can kind of engage in that tipuna way of knowing. You can practice, you can refine techniques, with the things that you collect, that are gifted to you. And that makes it a really special taonga.
I guess in terms of, we were taught really to consider the whakapapa of our materials. Provenance is really important to you as a maker. I guess also, shout out to Mata Aho, who are also present in the whare. How does it make you feel that, like, you are now kind of in the exhibition with Mata Aho, who I guess are our tour kind of in a sense, like they came through the Edina was our lecturer, which is pretty buzzy that you're in a show with them.
Oh, it's super buzzy. I really can't believe that I'm cast in a show like this. I'm feeling very proud.
Thank you, Edna. Thank you, Mata Aho.
Just because I can connect into this whare toi as well. When I was making this work, there was an exhibition on of works by Natalie Robertson, and it was opened by two of my uncles, my kōrō, Mata Haere Kōnia and George Kōnia, and Natalie extended an invitation, as well as at a Mark Gallery, to just have me be a part of it, and that was really special to me. Coming back to this whare toi and presenting a work here, it means a lot.
I like it as well, because I think with the presence of Te Whare Pōra downstairs in the dark room, is really, I guess, to me about like the interiority of the whare, the mink blankets, you know, referencing mink blankets on the inside of the marae. Like to me, these works also reference different parts of the structure of the whare, whakaaro, more of the whakaaro aspect of it, I guess. Just different spaces within the whare. Okay, so gonna go through my notes again. Oh yes, you have said that you are also influenced by the work of Arnold Manaaki Wilson, He Tangata, He Tangata. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I have said that. I think it's like a really amazing artwork. And my connection to that was, as a previous gallery assistant of Auckland Art Gallery, who have that work in their art collection. I'm a previous tour guide of theirs, and it was just always on their ground level collection show. I loved showing people that work. As a sculpture with hollowed out parts in it, I found it was a really great way to get people to engage in a place and to kind of look through, peer through. The artwork itself is an aged wood. It was left outside, and so it's got that kind of grey, weathered exterior. There's bits of moss on it, and the carving to it has been hollowed out. It's been ngau, a chisel out through the center. But there's two other holes through it that I really connect to, and they give the artwork, which kind of has the form of a torso into a head. The two holes give the eye, but they also reveal the point where like your heart would be. And for me, that work, I think about te hiningaro me te ngako, so to think about life with your head, but with also let your heart lead you to. It's just quite a special work. And because for making this work and the chairs that I was making during Tūru Noho Ora, I was drilling, I was just revealing that shape again and again. And yeah, so I connected to it in that way.
That's cool. That's really cool that it's a tohu of like hope for you, because I think when I like researching it, because I hadn't heard of it before, you talked about it, it was the interpretation of it was kind of like negative, like you have this figure where the heart has been ripped out, like there's a void on the inside. And so the interpretations that I was reading were kind of like, that's sad. But I'm happy that, you know, you're, I guess that's the beauty of it, it's subjective, you know, and you are finding hope and aspiration in it, so.
Totally, yeah. And that's quite, I find that, who did you read?
Like, it was just like articles online about it. One was from the Auckland Museum, and then one was from some guy whose name I can't remember. Sorry to that man. Yes, anyway.
That is what it is. The interpretations I've seen relate the work He Tangata to Hutia te Rito, Harakeke. Thinking about the importance of people.
He aha te mea nui o tēnei ao, he tangata, he tangata, he tangata.